rain, go away.
Yeah, I know.
Bill and Wendy and Steve want to go out and play.
Yes, we do.
With Jasmine.
And we will at some point.
You know when we're going to go outside and play? Next Friday. You can join the... Wasn't that a great segue, by
the
way?
That was... Yeah.
You can join the WGN Radio...
Oh, Jasmine just told me the Segway Hall of Fame called. They need you to call them back as soon as this show is over.
Jasmine was on us to talk about this, because you and I will be hosting this. You can join us in the WGN Radio Walk of Fame ceremony. Live broadcast if you can't make it, but come on out, because really this is going to be the last time we're going to be out on Pioneer Court. It's Friday, May 18th, a week from this Friday. It starts at 10 a.m. right outside the Tribune Tower.
Mm-hmm. I have nothing to say.
All right. We'll honor five inductees. Two prominent Chicago sports personalities. One is Chuck Swirsky.
You'll practice first, right?
Yes. Phil, you do Chuck.
I will have to.
You can do Dave Kaplan, too.
Oh, all right.
David Kaplan.
I'll do those.
So those two sports guys, Chuck Swirsky, David Kaplan.
The big fight is who gets to do Mary Vandeveld, because I want that one. I want that one
Mary,
very badly.
Mary, are you excited?
I want you guys fighting over me. Come on.
It's going to happen, Mary.
I am so excited. This is such a crazy honor. It's just so
deserved.
Weird.
Well deserved.
I don't know. With all these other people that are in it, it's just, you know,
should be there.
From Wally to Orion.
Yep. Roger Treemstra is
Roger. Oh,
in this class.
Can't wait to see Roger.
Who's clearing his throat?
Steve.
Oh, yeah, we know where you're there.
Steve's already been in. Steve's
oh,
in.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
I will bring you into the conversation if I can just get through this class.
Yeah.
Pierre-André, announcer from the golden days of radio, trusted voice in morning drive for over two decades, Mary Vandeveld. How many years have you been here, Mary?
21 and a half.
Have you been trusted for all 21 and a half?
I don't know,
Mary?
Apparently.
We'll find
I don't
that
know
out.
Who came up with that adjective.
We'll figure it out.
Of course, Steve Bertrand is in there as well. Steve, how long have you been here?
33 years.
He's not kidding.
Started when he was 10.
It sounds like that's impossible, but Steve's been here for 33 years.
That blows my mind.
It's pretty weird.
Yeah.
Well, because, it's all the same. Where'd you work before WGN?
Well, before that, I was an intern here, so 34 years counting that. I started here out of college. I was an intern.
That's so impressive.
That's amazing.
I think that they just looked around and they needed a body, and I've been hiding since.
Icky Bicky Soda Cracker. Icky
right.
Bicky Boo.
My God, I haven't heard that in so long. You just made me smile.
Yeah.
And my inner child smiled. Oh. Well, ouch, that hurts.
Hello to both of you.
We'll say farewell to the Tribune Tower after nearly six decades of total time calling this historic building our home. Breaks my heart.
That's the part. And actually, give the rest of the information, right. And then I want to focus on that for just a second.
You can congratulate this fifth class of honorees. You come to a big Tribune Tower party May 18th, or you can listen live, like we said, if you can't join us, beginning at 10. Bill and I will be emceeing this. You can learn more about this year's inductees at WGNradio.com/Walk of Fame.
All right, so a couple people have said, some of them guests, some of them co-workers, are you a little emotional about switching buildings? And the quick answer is yes. But for Steve, especially, who has been coming, reporting to this building every day for the last 33 and a third years.
Just like an LP. He is long playing. He's tall.
How fitting that he'd be on radio.
I remember when we moved into this building.
From
believe
where?
It or not, from Bradley Place up
both
on the north side.
Both places were there?
Yeah. So does Dave Ennett, who's probably
there. Ennett was around then, Orion, of course.
Yeah.
And
Dave is also on the Walk of Fame. Congratulations, Dave. How many years have you been here? Just to steal some for Trans Thunder.
I can vouch for Steve having been an intern because I was here when he was an intern. And I probably when you started here, Steve, and then I left for about 8 years and came back. And now it's been 22 years I've been back.
Yeah, that's the amazing. Sports office was also the record library up
really?
At Bradley Place.
Yes, it was. It was Chuck Swirsky, Bob Manowith, our editorial director, was in there.
Brian Davis around then.
Brian Davis, Dan McNeil was one of our guys.
Intern?
Really?
Yeah. He was an intern.
I think he was an intern down here, though, wasn't he?
He was there. Okay.
I did his traffic at the score.
Yeah.
Wait, this obviously was post-Copic. Chet Kopic when
pre
really
out of school and let's see who but we were in there in the record library with the editorial department on Bradley Place.
So I would go as a college student, as an intern, I'd go in there and I'm like, oh my, I can make these tapes from all these Grateful Dead albums because they're so I pull albums out of the record library and hang out in the sports department.
Rock and roll sports. Did you put together a demo tape?
Right.
I mean, it's cool because Roy Leonard would come in to look for an album.
Right.
That is blowing my mind.
All right. This room was gone when you started here, but for a while down here, there was a room in here, the record room, similar to what went on at Bradley Place. And it was you know that scene in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory where the kids go into the room that has the chocolate waterfall? If you liked music, you'd walk into that room and just drool because everything was there. Every kind of music, every album, it was amazing.
And every station had that because it was, you know, album-oriented rock. You played albums. When I worked at The Loop, there was a big record room as well.
But we weren't.
Yeah, but you needed music, right?
Yeah.
There was no internet.
There was every sort of music down there that you could imagine.
Everything. Everything.
And all the years of accumulation, that's what's incredible.
Where did all that go?
They were giving it away at the end.
Giving it away?
Yeah, they just said,
no, no, I remember that.
Dave's got the answer, right, Dave?
Well, some of it went to the archives at Northwestern.
Yeah.
Some of it is archived there. You know, they have the albums and tapes on these rolling shelves, which had cranks at each end. And you would actually have to turn the crank to roll the shelf to gain access to it.
Remember, that's how Marlene Wells got so skinny. She was actually squished in 1992. It was sad because it was like 3 days before
horrible.
We found her.
That's why she has foot problems.
Horrible.
Marlene Wells will be here, listeners, so you can come meet her. We'll bring her up on stage now that she was mentioned.
One other thing about that room, though, and Dave will back me up, is or Bill, too, the smell.
Ugh.
It was just, no, it was
great.
It was wonderful.
Like a library smell,
kind of. It smelled
like
the past.
Yeah.
Like you'd go in there and you go, I smell 100 years ago.
You're vinyl. A vinyl forest.
I was afraid somebody would close the door on me and I'd be stuck in there.
Do you know who showed me that room? It was Steve King from Steve and Johnny. He's the one, when I started here, he goes, you got to see this. And we walked
Was Les
through
Paul
it.
Hiding in there?
Les Paul was somewhere in the room. And he said he'd give me a donut if I could find Les Paul. And I'm like, I'll find him. But he would, you know, he was so nostalgic about it. And he'd go, oh, wait till you see this. And we'd go a couple of times. And he goes, you like classical music? And I don't. But I go, yeah, I love classical music. And he'd go, look what we have here. And he'd show me albums from 100 years ago.
Well, we have a listener who remembers when Steve Bertrand started, but we need to take a break first.
All right.
And Kathy, if you can hold on, and Steve Bertrand, if you can hold on, we will continue. We are sharing memories of Tribune Tower and WGN Radio here on WGN Radio. And we've been reliving Steve Bertrand's early days of WGN Radio. Somehow we got away from Mary Vandeveld's induction into the Walk of Fame class for this year, and it's turned to Steve Bertrand, but that's okay.
Well, no, let's quit that then.
Story of my life.
No.
It's fine. I want to hear this. Don't we have a caller or something about Steve?
Well, Mary, you've been here how many years?
21.
All right. And Steve, this amazes me that your pretty much whole radio career has been here. That is huge.
His whole adult life.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, Kathy has called us at 312-981-7200. And you remember when Steve Bertrand started?
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure if he was an intern or I assume he had already started. But my son was born in July of 1985. And I had decided to leave my job. I was a little older mother, and it was really hard. I had every intention to go back to work, but decided to stay home because I cried every day when I had to go to work. And so I decided to stay home. But what I didn't know was how difficult that was going to be, not having any adults to talk to. So with the radio, Steve, with Kathy and Judy, and Roy Leonard used to have Nick DiGilio on as a guest movie critic occasionally. He was like brand new then too. And Steve was such a young guy. He had this very young voice, which he still does. And they were my friends.
Aww.
What changed? Why did all this have to stop?
I didn't even know they were my best friends, but they were. I mean, it was like I'd look forward to turning the radio on every day just to hear my friends.
Kathy, that is so sweet. I actually started in May of 1985. So
okay, there you
just
go.
Just a couple of months before your son was born.
Yeah, and now he's going to be 33 in July, so yeah.
Me too.
That is really an accomplishment, Steve.
Yeah, and you know, I've hung, and I've heard Steve from then on. I mean, you know, wherever he's been on WGN, you know, starting with, I guess, Bob Collins was around then, Spike, and all those guys. And and now with Bill and Wendy, who I laugh every single day with also.
Will you send me a list? Because I can't, I wish I could remember everyone I worked with when, you know, for what years. Yeah. It's completely lost to me.
Yeah, because Spike was on the afternoons at first. So was Bob Collins at first.
I was with him on middays and then Spike in the afternoons. Yeah, and then all over the place.
They kind of moved around, but I kept, like, following my, I was stalking my friend.
So, but you wouldn't you say Mary's your favorite traffic person ever?
Yeah.
Oh, and I've heard Mary the whole time too. So,
what about Dave Ennett?
Maxfield left. Pardon?
I said, what about Dave Ennett? You cool with that too?
Dave Ennett, I wrote to him a couple times because I would send everybody Christmas cards.
Oh my God!
Thank you.
Nice.
I wrote to Dave Ennett, and he returned email several times, which I always thought. It was like something that every time I hear his voice, I think of that. I mean, he just seemed like the nicest guy in the world.
Well, thanks.
He's right up there.
Thank you very much.
Oh, this is so nice, Kathy. Honestly, so nice.
Well, and, you know, really, you guys don't realize how you get into our lives. I know my husband now is retired, and he didn't understand that I had the radio on all day. And now he's doing the same thing I was.
Oh, that's perfect. You should come out. If you get a chance next Friday, please come out. We'd all love to meet you.
Next Friday?
Yeah. Yes.
I will really try to.
Make sure you say hello to all of us, all right?
Okay.
We'd love to meet you.
And Kathy, I wish we had more to give you, but how about a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for your Mother's Day and just for being a tried and true WGN fan?
Well, I would, of course, love that, but that's not why I called. But
that's all right.
Can I take it, Kathy?
Yeah. No, she doesn't like you that much. You're not her friend anymore.
Don't take my pizza.
Well, what a great call. Kathy, we'll set you up. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or get it online at loumalnati's.com. Thank you so much for listening all these years, Kathy.
Well, thank you, guys.
Thank
really,
you, Kathy,
you don't
really.
Know what you do for people.
Oh, you're very kind. Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy.
Hope to see you Friday.
Bye.
All right, group hug, everybody.
Oh, this is so nice.
Oh, pat.
And Chris Duffy, if you don't put this in a promo, I don't know what you should do.
And you know, if there's one person brave enough to call and say those nice things, there's at least two or three others that are thinking it. So good news all around for us. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll get the news from Steve, and then there's a lot more show. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve did that right, Wendy. When you say Mendota, you pause. You let people think about it a little bit. I think Steve played that perfectly.
Think about the Corn Festival in Mendota.
It's the best.
I think I would have made a good farm girl.
What?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You would have made a top-notch farm girl.
You hear the story about the salesman?
Right. You would have been in every joke that's been told over the last 100 years. Anytime I heard a salesman joke with a farm girl, I'd go, I know that girl. That's Wendy.
I would have loved to have been a farm girl.
Is it too late?
Yeah.
Why? It's never too late.
Never too late. Go to Farm and Fleet, get yourself an outfit.
Get yourself, I bet you wore bib overalls in your day.
I did. Yeah? I had the pinstriped ones, the Oshkosh Bagosh.
What? I bet you chewed on a weed at some point.
What?
I didn't chew on it. All right. There's a guy who's never not funny, and he can jump into the conversation. Jimmy Pardo is with us. Hi, Jimmy.
Good morning. Am I talking to Bill and the Farm Girl?
Yeah, Bill and the Farm Girl. Welcome to the show. Have any farm-related questions?
Go away from here on out. Bill and the Farm Girl in the morning.
Do it.
Right? Or Bill and the Hippie, compared on that the last comment that Wendy made.
Were you shocked by that, Jimmy? Were you a little shocked?
It's information I certainly knew, but I'm not happy to hear about it on the airwaves.
Right.
I'm a woman of many outfits.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? Keep your filthy, dopey attitude in the basement.
That's a good
idea. I don't partake in drugs anymore.
No.
All right, that a girl. Keep the temple clean.
But the farm stuff, Jimmy, the farm stuff, anytime somebody hums Turkey in the Straw, you know that song, Turkey in the Straw? Wendy just starts to do that. She starts dancing.
Is it? Well, listen, when it's in your blood, you can't control it.
You can't control it.
But I've never done it, but I would have loved to have had a pickup truck. I'm serious.
Again, it's never too late. You go to an auto yard right now and get one.
I would love to have it, although everyone would ask me to help them move.
Yeah, you get that. You have very lofty goals, by the way.
Don't I?
I want overalls and a pickup truck. You're a dreamer. You're just a dreamer.
Yet, I don't want to help anybody.
No, but, right. There's that end of it.
That's what you learn.
Well, I haven't thought about that part of
right,
it.
Right. Jimmy, we're so excited. You're coming home. Jimmy Pardo's coming home, everybody.
Yes, I'm coming home Saturday. I'm going to be doing two recordings of my podcast. We're doing a Never Not Funny taping at 1:30 at the Zanies in Rosemont, and we're doing a my other podcast called Playing Games with Jimmy Pardo at 4 p.m. at Zanies in Rosemont, and we have a guest on each show. We have WGN's own Brian Noonan on the 1:30 show.
He's fantastic.
We have, he's great, and a terrific broadcaster, great
yes,
comedian, thrilled to have
Smells
him on the
nice.
Show.
Smells nice, looks nice, always looks nice.
All of that looks nice. He puts a bow tie on, and he cares about his appearance. He
yep.
cares about society.
Yep.
He does, unlike me.
And on the 4 o'clock show, we've got the host of the hottest new morning show in town. We got Bill Leff from Bill and the Farm Girl. So we are thrilled.
Good timing on that, Jimmy. They're getting
yeah.
a lot of pub.
Yeah, we're getting it early.
Yeah.
We're getting it early.
Yep, that's
Bill's
a lot of
pretty
pub.
Funny. I think you'll be impressed. I know he's been on your podcast before. Your podcast before.
Jimmy told me that the episode I did was the 43rd highest rated podcast that they've ever done, and I'm proud of that.
Congratulations.
I'm very proud of that.
You know what? Anytime you get a chance to break the top 50, it is something to be proud of.
Yep.
So that's the only reason I told you, by the way. A lot of people would go, hey, 43 seems low. Disagree.
No, I'm happy with that. Who's in 42nd? Who did I just miss beating?
To shock you, it's John Hamm.
John Hamm is really talented. I
yeah,
like John
and you'd
Hamm.
Think he'd be higher on that list, but you know, one of his appearances comes in tight at 42.
That's pretty solid.
Now I know people can listen to your podcast, but can they also go join either of these or both of these podcasts live?
Yes, of course. Buy tickets now. Go to zanies.com and buy tickets to come and see us at Rosemont in Rosemont, the Zanies there, which is one of my favorite clubs in the country. They it's a beautiful looking club. It's a good vibe club.
Good acoustics.
You know, a doper like yourself would fit right in.
Hey, listen, you said I don't help anybody. I just helped you sell tickets for this thing. So I'd zip
right,
it,
you know,
Jimmy.
That's a good point. Well, you know what? Go put your 8-track in your pickup and get out of here then.
Jimmy, if I may pay you a quick compliment, I had heard the podcast before. I'd never been a part of it until about a year ago. And boy, you handle it wonderfully. The crowd comes, they have a great time start to finish, and you do a good job of running the whole show.
Well, you're very nice. You know, I the day somebody wakes up and gives me a daily radio show will be the happiest day of my life. I love doing it. You know, I like being on TV as well, but there's something fun. You guys know this. There's something fun about, you know, being in the moment, talking about what's happening in your lives or in the news. And so, and then to do it, you know, the way that we do it with the podcast and then bring it out live to these various venues that we do across the country and have the fans come out and, you know, they know every inside joke. They
yeah.
the way that we did growing up, listening to, you know, our heroes. And, you know, so it's, and I'm not saying I'm anybody's hero, but, you know, I'm trying to make the equivalent to, oh God, I've lost interest
well,
in my
but
own
you've patterned. You pattern your show very much like your old radio hero, The Great Gildersleeve. It's like an updated version of Great Gildersleeve.
You know, I don't, I'm not comfortable with that kind of high praise, but I'm certainly going to take it from you. Yes, thank
you. All right,
you.
You're welcome. Welcome.
So what, I got to be honest with you, I don't know what, I know Never Not Funny, but what's Playing Games?
Ah, thank you for asking, Wendy. Playing Games is, you know what, here's what happened. We do a 2-hour show every week, twice a week, you know, with Never Not Funny, and whenever somebody tries to get somebody, hey, well, you should listen to my favorite podcast, Never Not Funny, and people tell us that they then go and look at it, and they go, oh, 2 hours, that's a big investment for something I've never heard of. So we try to come up with an idea of how do we make Never Not Funny, the vibe that's on that show, into a half-hour digestible format. And I have a love of game shows. I've hosted many game shows on television. I'm lucky to have done it. So we've made this game show that's kind of with the same energy as Never Not Funny. My co-host Matt Belknap is the announcer. A guy named Mike Henry is kind of this all about every man who helps out with the games. And we have a celebrity guest on every episode. And it's a half hour, a little bit of interview up top. Then we take phone calls to find some contestants. Then we play a game show. And then you're on your way.
How fun is that?
The only difference,
it's really
Wendy,
fun.
The only difference that I can see between what Jimmy does with his game show and the game shows we grew up with is on Jimmy's show, there's absolutely no mention of Dicker and Dicker of Beverly Hills. And I wish you would change that, Jimmy, because people love Dicker and Dicker of Beverly Hills.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. We are in negotiations to a second season of Playing Games. And season one, we were my wardrobe was sponsored by Botany 500.
Oh, they're so good.
I'm going to talk to Dicker. You know, I had an out with the other Dicker.
I know you did. I know you were, there was a bicker with Dicker. I remember.
I did have that Dicker bicker. You're exactly right, Bill.
I remember that. That was a classic show story.
Oh, that guy was
a jerk.
I tried to think of one more icker, and I couldn't do it.
No, we reached our limit on the ickers, didn't we?
Yeah, we're at the icker threshold.
Hold on. We've got more with Jimmy Pardo in just a little bit, so stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, the farm girl. You know, the farm girl on WGN.
When I came to the river and I couldn't get across, so I paid $5 to...
It's Bill and the farm girl.
Howdy!
Today's show brought to you by Schlage's Wheat Spray. Your wheat needs to be sprayed. Go with Schlage's. They're the best. Our guest is Jimmy Pardo. Jimmy's coming to town. Jimmy, anytime anyone talks about podcasts, they go, well, you can't make money in it. You can't be successful. And then somebody overrides it and goes, well, how about Jimmy Pardo? How about Mark Maron? There's a couple guys doing really well. What are you doing differently that's making you so incredibly rich?
Well, A, not making me rich, giving me a nice living. But
And he's gone.
He hung up on us.
No, I did not.
Oh,
no.
I thought we lost you.
Well, I thought you hung up on me, offended me by saying, what is this now?
You're getting call waiting. That's what it is. One of your friends hears you on the radio right now and is calling you.
You know, Wendy, I may have told you this story once before. I called into a local sports station back when I lived in Chicago, and I called to talk about the White Sox left fielder, Sean Abner.
Oh, yeah.
And I talked. And I'm literally on the radio talking to the guy about it, and in that way that we make fun of people. Why aren't they playing this guy more? That dumb character. But I was legit.
Right, not a character.
I keep getting called waiting, and then I finally flip over, and a guy goes, "Hey, you're on the radio right now."
He called to tell you you were on the radio.
You know, somebody on the radio.
I ruined my husband's moment in the sun at a White Sox game. He was there with a bunch of neighbors, and the milkman. Who was that?
Harold Perry.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Herb Perry.
Herb Perry. Third baseman Herb Perry.
There had been a rain delay, so there were the tarps rolled up, and Jim was sitting there with some neighbors right by the tarps, and the ball came there, and you see Jimmy Mack reaching out over the tarp, and Herb missed the ball, looked at Jim, and he's like, "You doofus." And then Jim's kind of just sitting there laughing, and then all of a sudden you see him pick up his phone, and that was me calling him to say,
nice.
You're on TV. I will never do that again.
Nice.
So you,
I ruined
you
the
were
moment.
That person.
Yeah, I ruined the moment.
By the way, Harold Perry, one of the two actors to have played the great Gildersleeve, Jimmy's radio idol. How about that? It all ties
you're
in.
A piece of work.
That's true. He and Willard Waterman, Wendy, of course, the other one.
Billy Waterman.
All right, really quick. Jimmy, the last time I talked to you, you were in a battle of words with Frank Stallone.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I guess I was. You know, he said something stupid on Twitter. I called him out on it, and all of a sudden, I was getting national press. It was stupid.
Yeah, but Frank Stallone was happy he was getting national press.
I don't disagree with that, Wendy, but I don't know why I got dragged. I mean, I understand that I said something, but why was I the go-to? Even comedian Jimmy Pardo and Podka had something to say about it.
But here's the beauty of this. I've known you forever. You and I have gone to school. We went to high school together. The Jimmy Pardo I knew in high school never in a million years would guess that one day he and Frank Stallone would be fighting. That could never be, right?
No, I never saw it going. I thought I would have a bigger chance fighting with Patrick Swayze's brother.
Right. Don Swayze?
Yes. I of course didn't see that coming, but I'm thrilled that it happened. You know, I mean, you know, you talk about bucket lists. I can now cross something off.
But now that Katy Perry and Taylor Swift are friends again, is there a chance that you and Frank Stallone could just call this to an end and just say let's hug and make up? Will that ever happen? Do you think?
Do you know the great actor Hector Elizondo?
Love him.
Yeah.
He is currently negotiating a sit down between me and Frank.
Hector Elizondo is.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so nice of him. That's excellent. Well, if anyone can get it done, it's Hector. You know that.
Of course I know that. I'm the guy talking to Hector on a daily basis. And Frank, I'm not going to be honest. I'm the one that's... I'm all for it. Frank is slowboating this thing.
Is he? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I hate to know that. All right, so here's the other news since we saw you last. The White Sox, your Chicago White Sox, now play their games here on WGN Radio.
Isn't that great?
Isn't that something?
Yes. I don't know how to respond to that. Yes, is it? Are you guys excited about it?
Yes, very much so.
I am, because for my whole life, the White Sox have always been on the back burner. The Cubs always got all the attention. So I'm very pleased that the Sox are on our station now, so we can brag about them.
Well, you're going to have to wait till maybe next year to start.
Well, yeah, but we can start.
You know what the best part of it is, Jimmy? When you come into this building now in the Tribune Tower, the first thing you see is a giant gold statue of Bill Naharodny.
Do you see Billy Nuts?
As soon as you walk in the building.
You know, I don't know. Did I ever tell you about the time that I got yelled at by Greg Pryor, former third baseman?
No.
He was doing a my stepbrother Scott and I went to see, it was Greg Pryor, I want to say either Wayne Norhagen or Bill Naharodny.
Yeah.
We're doing a signing at an auto dealership in Oaklawn.
Yeah.
And we went to go meet him, and was it Andy the Clown? Was that the character?
Yeah, Andy the Clown.
Oh, yeah.
White Sox mascot.
So Andy the Clown's there doing that, come on, White Sox, that whole thing he would do.
Yeah.
And my stepbrother and I were kids. We're making fun of him. And Greg Pryor gets up from the table and comes over and goes, "You two, knock it off!" And you know what? In retrospect, at the time, it's like, screw Greg Pryor. We're not fans anymore. He was right.
Jimmy, one time when the White Sox were playing the Orioles in the playoffs, because my family had season tickets, I got to go to one of the games. And one of my friends was there with me, and we're watching the White Sox and the Orioles play in the playoffs. And in the second inning, Andy the Clown decides he's going to perch himself right in front of us, right in front of where we're sitting. So for three innings, we couldn't see anything because Andy's just going, "Over the fence is a home run." He just kept saying that over and over. And my friend finally said to him, "We know that. We're baseball fans. Over the fence is a home run. It's always been that way, and it'll always be that way. Go away.
Over the clown is the game. Could you get out of my way?"
Yeah, move it. The farm girl's spoken.
Farm girl has spoken. She means it. So when you come back to town, because you lived here for so many years and now you haven't for so many years, what's the first thing you do to get back in the Chicago frame of mind once you're back here?
Well, it's the obvious. My dad and brother are going to pick me up, and we're going to go and get some pizza. That's the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to get a nice night of sleep and then get ready for those two shows at Zany's this Saturday.
God, it's this Saturday already.
This Saturday, Wendy.
This Saturday, Wendy.
Yeah.
Can you run through the details again? Who's going to be on, where it is,
sure.
And how we get tickets?
More than happy to do it. It's at Zany's in Rosemont. The 1:30 show is a live taping of my podcast, Never Not Funny, with our guest is Brian Noonan from right there at WGN. And then the 4 o'clock is a taping of my podcast, Playing Games, with Jimmy Pardo, and our guest is Bill Leff, who I'm speaking to at the moment. And,
Jimmy, this is a $1,500 value that you're selling for only $25 to $35. I don't know how you make money on something like this. You're losing money, just even thinking about it.
I can even tell you how I'm losing more money. You can get yourself a combo ticket, get tickets to both shows for just $40.
That's crazy.
What?
That's insane.
How does he do it?
That's volume.
I don't know how I do it, and I'm not happy about the contract.
Someone has just texted in and says, "Does Bill do a Gildersleeve impression?"
Leroy? Now, there's only three people in the world who get that, but they really enjoyed it, Wendy.
Who put the nickel in you?
Long story.
All this you can expect when Bill Leff performs live with Jimmy Pardo.
I'll do impressions of the radio greats from the 1940s. That's the whole topic that I'll be doing. It'll be fun.
Well, and it'll fit right in with our nonsense. Again, our motto is you get three people at a time. That's our motto.
Yep.
So
wait till you hear it. When Jimmy and I do our Fibber McGee and Molly, people go nuts.
Nobody sees Bill as Molly, and then when he does it, they're surprised by it.
Right. It's shocking. It's shocking for everybody. I can't wait till Saturday, Jimmy. It's going to be so much fun.
I'm looking forward to it. We're thrilled to have you on, and please, anybody, come on out. I think there's some tickets left for both shows, so come on out. It's a matinee. We'll get you in and out. You're home in time for dinner, and you'll have a nice night.
Rosemont.zanies.com. All your ticket information is there to see Jimmy Pardo's two podcasts. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks, you guys. See you Saturday.
See you Saturday.
Thanks, Jimmy.
That's Jimmy Pardo.
Will Frank Stallone be there?
Frank Stallone will not be there, and Greg Pryor, former White Sox third baseman, also not in attendance. Stick around. We've got news next and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Dane Neal joins us right now, and Dane has put together a panel that I am amazed at. Dane, when I was a kid, I used to watch Cups Show here in Chicago. And on any given episode of Cup Show, he would have Senator Charles Percy, Roberta Flack, and Boo Boo from Yogi Bear on together.
I remember when Rerun was on, and that was when they discussed like dancing techniques in the global sense. And you know, it's an eclectic blend of things that we try to do.
Life
here.
Is.
Often the last week or the last time that we were on, we brought in for the James Beard Awards, and you look at that title. It's one of those things that once you win it forever, you're changed, not only to yourself, right, but to the rest of the world, and you're introduced as that in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. And today we've got, you know, some of our very own and beloved personalities that we know, love, and appreciate and embrace on a regular basis here, and then also one that has been embraced by the world. And even more so in his home country of Japan. So in studio, we have a reigning Indianapolis 500 champion, the one and only Takuma Sato from Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing. He's the iconic 14 driver. So Takuma, welcome to WGN. Welcome to Chicago.
Hello. Thank you very much.
Congratulations, first and foremost.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is that? It's been like a whole year of congratulations. Everybody says that to you at all times?
Yeah, it was literally like every day, to be honest.
Not a bad thing.
It's a super busy, but a happy busy.
It's happy. And a guy who's always busy, right? And you know, when you're a singer, let's say you got a hit song, a hit album, and you're out there, you're doing things, there's nobody that has more of a career that is like every time he gets out there, it is an encore mic drop moment than our one and only. We feel as he's one of Chicago's very own. He truly is, but he is also Indiana's own. Jim Corneliusson is here. Jim, welcome.
Hello,
Jim.
Hey, good morning.
How are you?
I'm really good. Yeah.
Good to see you again. I've told you this before, and I'll probably tell you again, but you set the pace so nicely for any event you ever sing at. As soon as you start to sing, you just say to yourself, well, this is real. This is really happening. This is fantastic. So good to see you again.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here.
Well, you almost got to turn his mic down, right? Even the talking voice is like, hello, I'm giant. You know, in every well, but think about this. And, you know, so much, you know, history and nostalgia attached to the Indianapolis 500 is that kind of thing. We talked about it off the air, whether it's like the Kentucky Derby. Even if you're not into motorsports, you will find yourself watching this event. I think it is the largest attended sports event in history, right? It's 400,000 people when you count everybody that's there.
The Kentucky Derby is?
No,
Indianapolis 500.
But it's like, let's say you're not into horse racing. You'll watch that. You'll find people from all over, not only race fans, but all walks of notoriety attending the Indy 500, and everybody watches it. And so you think, who better to kind of set that event off and kick it off than Jim? And it's got its own. The national anthem is wonderful, of course. You know, we love it. He does it better than anyone. But it's got its own iconic song, Jim Nabors, for so many back home in Indiana. It was so identified with it, right?
Which, I mean, come on. Who thought Gomer Pyle could sing? I mean, that blew everyone's mind.
Right.
So where, like, Jim, in your Hall of Fame, and I know you're a sports fan to a certain extent, but also a singing fan, where does Jim Nabors rank, and what is it like to follow kind of in his footsteps and sing that song?
Well, I think it's really cool. Like, Wendy, what you said, who knew Jim Nabors could sing like that? Because you would hear, you know, we're dating ourselves when we do this, right?
Shazam. Okay.
All right. Yeah, exactly. Golly.
Surprise.
Gomer Pyle, USMC, right? And I can remember him breaking out in song and
rubbing your eyes and going, wait a minute,
what was that? I know, it was just so unexpected, especially as a counterpoint to that character that he played. So, you know, it's hard not to really like Jim Nabors. He was a good soul, warm guy. I think everybody connected with him really well. And of course, then he had that voice. And I think 32 years he sang it.
Did he really?
Back home in Indiana.
So in his footsteps to sing the song, if they redid Gomer Pyle, will you get that role, do you think, Jim?
That's not my call. You mean the Gomer Pyle role? Yeah. Let's do a remake of USMC. I'll work on that.
All right.
So last year we were watching the Indianapolis 500 at home, and, you know, Jimmy Mack's like, come on, Jim Corneliusson is singing. That was your first year last year?
It was, yeah, and it was so exciting. It was just, first off, you know, I went to Indiana University, and I've been back for a couple of real big sporting events down there, and then my son was born down there, and my ex-wife's from there. You know, we had the Indy Fuel, the Blackhawk affiliate hockey team down there, and so getting down to Indianapolis is always a lot of fun, but to go down, you know, I do the national anthem in a lot of places, but to go down and do this iconic song, kind of special song at the world's largest single day sporting event is a pretty exciting thing to be a part of. And people embraced it so much. It was touching. I can't tell you how much social media.
Were you nervous at all the first time you're doing it? It's just the big hoopla. Were you nervous at all?
I was nervous for a couple months beforehand. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I was nervous. And I was memorized solid a month before. And then, you know, 15 minutes before you go on stage, you're looking around. And I mean, there's so 300-something thousand people in the stands, and you know you have a real international audience. I've never sung the song before like that.
Yeah.
There's no teleprompter. You're going to get up. You're going to do it, and so
you nailed it.
I was very happy with it. It was so much fun. Everybody at the track was wonderful. Really class act. What they have going on there. So
hundreds of thousands of people in the audience, millions all over the world in every single country. And so Takuma, to get out there and do this, you've been a successful driver in a number of different series, race Formula One in Europe. And when it comes to America, at what point, and you raced in IndyCar for a number of years beforehand, had you fully grasped like what the Indianapolis 500 means, not only to IndyCar, but also to just race fans and just America? It's a great part of Americana.
Well, it's a bit of a yes and no, to be honest, because participating for the IndyCar series, everybody's dreams and ultimate goal is to win the 500. You know, we know that, and we know how big scale it is, but in truly, really depth of the understanding of how it is being, it's impossible until you experience it. So, you know, the first year, your mind is blown off because there's obviously 300,000 people there, and it's just one of the biggest event in a sporting career in Earth and history as well. So yeah. you get nervous, you get excitement, but more you participate year by year, you get more appreciation.
So what happens, Takuma, when you go back to Japan? You've got to be the number one hero there, right?
Well, talking about motor racing category, perhaps yes, it is.
Yeah.
But you know, in a number of the sport, and I mean nowadays, obviously the baseball is a big thing in Japan too. So I'm not necessarily the biggest at all, but I think I'll be one of them, and I really appreciate everybody's support.
Yeah, you know, think about this. It's one thing. We talked about what it means to America and so many iconic American drivers who've done, be the first person of Asian descent to be the first Asian to win the Indy 500. Did you go back there? Were you surprised? You know there's race fans in Japan. You have fans there. You've been a celebrity for a long time. Were you surprised that at the reception that you did get and just how crazy they were for it?
Yeah, it was unbelievable experience and a great journey, to be honest. Immediately after the checkered flag last year, up until today, really, it's just a non-stop. And when I had opportunity to actually drive the original winning car from number 26 car with, you know, last year's with original engine, actually, because HPD, which is a Honda Performance Development, rebuilt after the race with my original engine to the fresh engine. So the audience were, I drove it one of the Honda Appreciation Fan Day, so fan, you know, appreciation days, and drove it into Indink Motegi. And the over 30,000 fans just came to hear it, and that was the very original sounds of what we had in 500. So it's just a significant moment. Significant.
What's the highest speed you've ever driven at?
Legally.
Legally?
No, not legally.
On the super speedway, we do 235 miles per hour.
Oh, wow.
Which is an average speed of a run lap.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Pretty fast.
So does G-force pull you back when you're driving that fast? You've got to just be pulled back.
Yes, in a high speed bend, we actually pull like 5 G-force, so 5 times your body weight.
And is the wheel, you know, sometimes you have a wheel that has give and some it's really tight. Which is it? Because one tiny move going that fast,
right,
and you're off the track.
Well, it's literally, there is a zero play, you know, unlike a public car. So you almost need to watch the inside of the car, the course that you want to go.
Yeah.
And then the car is basically turning in. And the steering wheel is pretty heavy and a pretty kickback, you know. So, but really, depending on the track, like if you go to the street course, there is so busy. And then the super speed or oval, you know, it's very, very smooth. So
right.
It's kind of, you have to adopt the driving style.
When you're driving at 235 miles per hour.
You are so jealous, aren't you?
Well, Bill's wondering where the cup holder is, right?
I know where the promise me you're not texting while you're driving. Promise me? All right. That's good news. All right. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Our guest is Dane Neal, host of On the Road with Dane Neal, which can be heard Saturdays from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock here Takuma Sato joins us, defending Indianapolis 500 champion, and Jim Cornelison, who has not won yet, but will win it someday. Stay in the game, Jim.
As soon as I lose enough weight, in the car.
He's not only a great singer, professional crowd exciter,
yes.
Right? He sets the stage.
Yes.
He sets the stage for it. We think about it. We were talking a little bit about some of the people who've won and haven't won the Indy 500. A.J. Foyt is one of those iconic drivers who's
won the most times.
He's
right?
won four times, right? Yeah. So the but you look at him physically, right? He's kind of a man of lifestyle, you know, yeah. kind of an overdoer yeah. in a lot of different ways. You know, he's cantankerous. If you've ever gotten
rugged.
A chance to interview him, yes, definitely rugged. He's been through a lot. The drivers these days, you know, just have to keep themselves in such incredible shape. I talked to some of the other drivers who said that they're so afraid of, not afraid, but there's so many restrictions. They can't even ride a bike, you know, during the season, just in case they might fall and hurt themselves, right? Because they're a valuable mm-hmm. commodity. They have to get in shape and stay in shape all year round. So, like, what is it that you do? We were thinking about it, you know, during the break. Like, what do you do to kind of maintain? You're thinking you're just driving, obviously, but it's very physically taxing.
Well, looks like I'm one guy that's doing cycling then.
Yeah.
Well, I think, like you said, nowadays it's so physically demanding. You know, like, it pulls like 4Gs and 5Gs easily. And really, for 1.5 race, you know, we lose 2 to 3 pounds of the body weight. In extreme cases, we lose 4 or 5 pounds body weight. So that shows how much stamina you really need, and you have to train specifically.
Are you sweating that off?
We do,
is
yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we don't have air conditioning, so we do sweat a lot.
Oh.
I didn't even think about that.
You don't have the top down, though, so you're getting a little bit of the breeze. But that's something to consider because, you know, just for the safety with the Nomex suits and the helmets and everything, especially when you're racing a lot in the summertime, do you ever get where you're just uncomfortably hot? How do you keep yourself cool?
Well, I mean, fortunately, the open wheel, we call it, you know, IndyCar is like the Formula car. So you have some wind and effect and natural air coming in. But like you said, yes, we got a 3 layers Nomex suits, and it's for the safety. So we don't really blame for that. And it is getting hot, but I think it's sweating not only because of hot, it's just how physically really is. I mean, you think about the probably people who doesn't know about motor racing, you know, okay, we may be sitting and driving really easy going,
right.
But actually not. You know, if you try to think about it, you try to push the wall, for example. It's like fix the wall. It's that you're never going to move. But if you try to keep pushing, and then your heartbeat is suddenly half, and then you have sweating so much, right? It's called isometric. So that's what's happening in the car.
How do you do at the racing video games? Do you ever play the video games?
Mario Kart?
Like Gran Turismo?
Yeah.
No, but that's a great question, because a lot of the simulators is how you can train for different tracks that you can't actually at.
Yeah, I wish we had bananas, you know, not IndyCars, but... I mean, we physically, seriously, that we do actually have a lot of simulation stuff, because nowadays physical testing is very limited.
Yeah.
So that's why the teams and driver actually go to the practice for some exercise by doing a simulator racing.
I just read somewhere, and I cannot quote a source, but I read that kids who do well at driving games are better drivers. It makes sense.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's just a two-dimensional world. You know, obviously the kids pick up really quickly, and they are doing a brilliant job, but I think it's on a real life, it's some little different, you know, all three dimensions, G-force and yawing. And but I think it's nowadays the technology is moving so far forward, and I think the simulator actually getting a real great model.
You were one of the GQ Men of the Year. Was it GQ Japan?
I was, yes.
You are just really attractive. I'm sorry. I got to put that out there.
All right. So a career?
I got to.
Post-racing modeling career? Is that the thing?
Not quite. No, I don't think so. But no, I'm really really fortunate that being at this kind of environment I got, and I'm so lucky guy to be able to racing, and I really appreciate everybody's support.
Yeah, and when you think about the tour that you have to do, you've got to go on and do all of these things as an ambassador for the Speedway, for the race, and all that kind of stuff. You've got to kind of have that mental focus. Talked with Alexander Rossi, last year's champion, a couple days ago, and I asked him if he had anything that he wanted me to say to you to get in your mind, you know, get in your head and kind of have that mental advantage. And fortunately for you, he couldn't think of anything. He's like, I wish I could have something, whatever. So you have to have that mental focus in order to do it.
I think so. I mean, any other Olympic athlete in the same way is just if you focus, you know, that's for the sport. But at the same time, as a professional athlete or race car driver, especially, you need so many sponsorship and so many other environment that you needed. So this is just a part of the job too.
You know you can make a lot of extra money as an Uber driver. You know that, right?
Get you there in half the time.
Yeah. How's your parallel parking? Can you parallel park? You know where you have to back into a spot? Are you really good with that? Have you ever gotten a speeding ticket?
I think as long as going forward, I'm pretty good at that.
And he can do it. It's beautiful.
Jim had mentioned growing up there that it is so much a part of the culture. And of course, May, when it comes there, Indianapolis comes alive. And we talked about it. I talk about it all the time in the show, is that there's no substitute for actually physically being sure. there. TV does a great job, but you can't get all the sights, the sounds, the smells, the vibrations, everything about it. And I know, I think tickets are still available, right? And so, Jim, if you want to give some information on the, as far as the address where people can get tickets, the, you know, is it IMS?
IMS.com.
You can still get some tickets there. But Jim, talk a little bit about it. Experiencing it live, so different than just watching it.
Well, you know, the whole thing is this really sensational experience, right? Sensory. I mean, colors, people, the energy, sounds. I mean, the sounds, you know, the cars, when they go, they just rattle the inside
of
your...
And the smells, too, right,
Jim? Oh,
yeah, I know that sounds crazy,
too,
but that's
right.
part of it.
Right, and I had the opportunity to be right down in the pits during the race, even, which was really great. I mean, I was, like, 15 feet from a car. Yeah. Those guys come over the wall, they do everything to that car, and have it moving again in seconds.
It's just amazing to watch
to see how
quickly.
Fast and how coordinated that is. Those pit crews, they are their own kind of athlete or dancer or something, because that's a highly choreographed and practiced routine that those guys do. And so being close to it, and I'll give you an example of something. Down there in the pit row, this just blew me away. I was watching the cars come down the straightaway, and you know, you see it coming at you, you know it's going fast, but then at some point when it hits about a, I don't know, 45-degree angle or something, you try to track that car across your vision when you're 30 yards from it, you can't
do it.
It's nothing but a blur. Or I actually had this weird experience where it, like, jumped. Like, you know what I'm saying? It was like
because
like,
out of your
like,
vision
pop,
for
pop,
a second.
Pop,
yeah.
For a second, you know. Yeah, it was absolutely mind-boggling.
And as big as the event itself is, the race itself, there is stuff going on at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you know, all the way leading up, and especially that race weekend. There's concerts, so many things for people to do. You've got Train. The band Train is performing, mm-hmm. I think, that Friday. Blues Traveler. And it's IMS.com. IMS.com for tickets. Really, it's a reasonable way to take the family out, get them into racing, an experience that you'll absolutely never forget.
Dane, thank you. Takuma, thank you. Jim, thank you. Greatly appreciate
pleasure.
It.
Good
thank
luck.
You very much.
Keep up the great work.
Appreciate
it. Quick break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world.
Oh, the world is changing, whether we like it or not. Bill, what do I like to call Professor Tom Mikitas, the human Prozac?
I've heard you say that, yeah.
He is a professor of history at DePaul University.
Luckily, he chuckles when he hears that and not hangs up. That's the good news.
Well, Tom, usually you really calm me down because I hear things in the news, and I have to be 100% honest with you. I don't always understand it. For instance, President Trump has left the Iran nuclear deal, and I don't know exactly what that means. Can you help explain that to us?
Yeah, well, I think the difficulty in this case is that it's not clear to anyone really what it means, because the devil will be in the details. There's no question he likes the highly dramatic, symbolic gesture of announcing he's pulling out. But on the other hand, the precise details of how stringent the embargo will be, you know, or the sanctions will be enforced. Will they be lightly enforced? Will there be exceptions to them? If that's been suggested. Will we put real pressure on European allies and China and Russia if we can even do that? So it could mean a great deal. It could mean nothing at all. Iran, so far, is taking the moral high ground and saying they will continue to abide by the agreement, which all indicators show that they've been adhering to it. So we just have to see how it's going to play out. The earliest we'll know is this summer, when it's not really set to go into effect until early August.
Tom, this deal was brokered during the presidency of Barack Obama, so there are some who say that it's being undone for that reason alone, that Donald Trump doesn't like anything that has Obama's name on it. Where do you stand on that?
You know, it's very interesting you mentioned that, because I checked the European newspapers yesterday. I looked at Le Monde, the French, the French daily, and that's exactly what they're saying. They're claiming that, in fact, exactly right, there's this history of anything with Obama's name on it is to be excuse me, is to be repudiated. But it was also part of a campaign thing. And, you know, there's a certain courting of the drama, courting of chaos. So he always likes this big buildup. Oh, I'm not going to tell you. Maybe I'll do it. Maybe I won't. He liked having people come to the White House trying to persuade him to change. But it was pretty clear, I think, all along that he was going to pull the plug. And that's exactly what he did.
So that does that drama stem from, I know this seems simplistic, but I mean this, he used to be on a reality television show where they would play this thing up every week, you know, we'll tell you the answer to that when we come back, that kind of thing. Does he still play by those rules even as the president? He does, right?
Absolutely. He told his staff when he first took office, he said, treat my time in the White House as though it's a daily reality show with me being the star. No question about it that he likes this. I mean, we saw it with the attack on Syria. Maybe I'm going to respond. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll do it today. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow. Maybe I'll do it the day after. Maybe it'll be big. Maybe it'll be small. He wants everyone hanging on his word. The same thing with the Jerusalem, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, pulling out of the Paris Climate Accords. There's this constant, if anything, you could argue this really is the underlying strategy of a lot of his activity, is to appeal to the base and to keep the pot constantly boiling.
Explain this plan, though, to us. What is in this nuclear deal?
Well, the nuclear deal, you know, to be perfectly fair, no one ever thought that it was the perfect agreement. What it did was to push Iran back from the edge. At the time it was brokered, Iran was speculated to be as little as 1 to 3 months away if they chose to fast track it, of getting a working nuclear bomb. Now, whether they had an effective delivery system is another subject for debate. The purpose of the deal was to get some more breathing room, saying, okay, what we can do is get you to get those centrifuges offline, stop enriching the uranium, you know, back off some of this stuff. And then that pushed the window from 1 to 3 months to a full year, meaning Iran could not easily ramp up to get a nuclear weapon without everybody knowing it. So it was it really provided a really good buffer. You know, there was a retired Israeli general who came out and said, you know, not a great deal, it's not perfect, but we need security now, and this at least gives us some. And I think that was the plan. Now, you know, everybody wanted it to be more stringent and so on. It opened Iran to invest, you know, to monitoring. And in return, there was a lifting of sanctions and the releasing of some funds and whatnot. So I think by all accounts, I mean, the fact that the United States, along with Russia, China, Britain, France, and the rest of the European allies went along with this, is, I think, a pretty good thing. It was not just Obama's deal. It's no secret that Putin and Obama didn't particularly get along. But they did on this. So the idea that it, you know, is just some kind of, you know, shoot from the hip maverick kind of give away the store thing is simply not true.
Do you perceive this? Some people have said that this is the United States going back on a promise. Is that fair to say or not fair to say?
It is, and it's worrying. In fact, that's another cause for concern with people, in that you know, how does this look going into negotiations with North Korea if they can reasonably say, well, you know, we can't trust you. You know, you'll change your mind tomorrow or, you know, the day after that. But again, the president really, you know, has insisted that the negotiations agree are happening because he essentially, you know, cajoled, bullied, stood up to North Korea, and that emboldened him to do this with Iran. The other thing to remember, too, is he shuffled the players in the White House. Rex Tillerson and H.R. McMaster both were in favor of keeping this. He replaced them with Pompano and Bolton, who is an absolute hawk on Iran and everything else. So he's, you know, taken away many of the voices of people who said, you know, let's go slowly here. This is really not a good idea. But he went ahead and did it anyway.
So the point of having these presidential advisors is to give you the pros and the cons in any given situation. If you give him the cons, he seems to not want to listen to it, and you're quick to lose your job if that's the case. Is that what you're saying, too, Tom?
Absolutely right. Now, it's not an easy thing to do. I think in any of our endeavors, your field as well as mine, one of the hardest things is to go to your boss and say, sir or ma'am, you have a lot of good ideas, but this isn't one of them. And let me tell you why. It doesn't make you very popular. But the best presidents, and one of the best at it was Dwight Eisenhower, used to not tip his hand in cabinet meetings as to what he really felt was what he was thinking. He wanted everyone to voice their views so he could make up his mind and have an informed decision. I know someone who worked in the Bush administration. George Bush preferred people to meet, come up, hash their differences out, and then come to him with the best recommendation. But your very best presidents, I think, have always wanted not to surround themselves with yes men and yes women. That's not the case here. He really does not like to be disagreed with. He monitors, according to the accounts, he monitors his what is being said about him on the news, and he gets a report of favorable press on a daily basis. So that's not a White House environment that is conducive to letting people, to a healthy discussion of alternatives.
Is there any benefit for pulling out of this deal?
I can't see any. I think Boris Johnson, the British Foreign Secretary, wrote a really good op-ed that was published in the New York Times a couple of days ago, in which he said, he quoted Churchill, democracy is the worst political system except all the other ones that have been tried. So this deal is kind of like that. It's not the best possible deal, but it's the best we could have come up with at the time. And the best that what we should do is stay in it and try to make it better. You know, there's no question there's a lot of concern about Iran, Iran's involvement in Iraq, its involvement backing the Assad regime, its backing the rebels in Yemen and so on. I mean, there are still issues. There's issues with their ballistic missile program. But these are things to be negotiated and worked out as best you can. And if necessary, then you can go to the option of increasing sanctions or putting them back on. But to just pull this out, and as commentators have said, what's the plan B? What's the alternative? What do we have now that we're offering to replace it?
Can Donald Trump change his mind? Seriously, I'm not being funny here. Can he change his mind and say, upon further inspection on this and thoughts, maybe this isn't such a good deal? Is this something that can be turned around?
It is, but he would never say it that way.
Right.
He's more likely to say was, well, I never said that, or I never meant it.
Exactly.
The notion of that there is no such thing as uncontestable facts anymore, and there's all this fake news, he could quite easily, turn. But I just don't see that happening, because this is too much. He's been too public about it. His base likes it. He's really climbed up high on the stepladder, and to climb down from it would be, to him, I think unacceptably embarrassing. So I'm not optimistic that's going to occur. A more likely outcome, and this is where I can give you a smaller dose of Prozac today than I normally do, is that in fact, he would be soft on the implementation.
Ah.
He's got his big big dramatic victory. He's made his point. He's made his statement. He could do what he's done on the North American free trade thing, saying, well, yeah, we're going to renegotiate it, but, there's a steel embargo, but we're going to negotiate something with Canada and maybe with Mexico. And pretty soon you realize you're not seeing the dramatic change you feared or thought you would. That could be that to me would be the best outcome after this. And given that he wants that big victory, which he can now claim he's got, he may do that. And he also may depend on how things go in the Korea negotiations.
Yeah. Could he get his attorney to give Iran $130,000 and then say he has no idea that money changed hands? Is that possible?
I think that number would be a little too low.
Maybe.
Which attorney are we talking about, by the way?
Oh, that's true. All right. Good point.
Hard to keep track of them.
Tom McKitis is our guest. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. More after this. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN.
And now we are back in action. We are talking to Professor Tom McKitis. He is a professor of history at DePaul University. There is some good news in the mix today. Three American political prisoners have been released from North Korea. Secretary Mike Pompeo arrived there, and is getting them home. This is a good move in the Donald Trump White House, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no question about that. Now, these things often accompany a thaw in relations, and they also often precede negotiations. They're goodwill gestures. In fact, there's some speculation that these individuals were essentially grabbed as bargaining chips. You know, there was an intention to release them. But whatever the case, it's always a good thing. I'm happy for them and their families. And, you know, it's a good sign to begin the negotiations with.
What do you think is behind Kim Jong-un all of a sudden wanting to appear to be friendly and polite? What's behind
I don't trust him. Is it just me?
No one trusts him. No one trusts the entire regime. People don't realize it's not the first time we've been down this road where there's been these grand gestures of, oh, let's talk, let's end the war, which has not been, since it was the ceasefire was put in effect in the mid-50s, is still just a ceasefire. Let's talk things out and make up. No one is putting, is more than cautiously optimistic. I think the thing is the sanctions are biting hard, but the more important thing is he took a trip to Beijing, and I think the Chinese government had a tete-a-tete with him and made clear where he stands, because he's absolutely dependent on them. And I think there was a real, he came back a lot more pliant. Now, he's going to spin this as, I've achieved my objective. We have a nuclear deterrent now. We have good delivery capability. We can hit the U.S., which I don't think is true, but they claim they can. And therefore, it's time to talk, because we're negotiating from a position of strength. President Trump is going to spin it already. We'll see. I got them to the bargaining table. The truth be told, if they both allow each other a little bit of room to do that and don't overdo it, so that it seems like one side has to visibly lose face, which both of these leaders detest, there's a possibility, but I don't know how much of one there will be. We just have to see.
All right, so I feel a little better about North Korea, but a little worse about Iran.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad way to end it. But again, the other thing too is the Iranians are showing commendable restraint. I don't look for an immediate ramping up of tension in the region. As I said, I think in the next 3 months or so, the first round of sanctions will kick back in after 90 days to give companies a chance to transition out. We'll get and then in the next batch by November is 180 days. But the real thing is going to be, how strictly do we enforce this? And I'm hopeful that having made the gesture and the statement, the administration might be perfectly content to tread lightly and not make this, make this bite as hard as it could, in which case it might not be as dramatic a change as everyone fears.
I need a bigger dose of the human Prozac. That's all I'm telling you.
You're getting a small one, but at least it's not nothing at all.
Right. He's a professor, Tom Makaitis, history at DePaul University, and you're on Twitter, Dr. Makaitis. It's spelled MOCKAITIS. Thanks so much, Tom.
Yeah, anytime. Have a nice day.
You too, Tom. Thanks so much. All right, let's do this. Take a quick break.